listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, broadcasting from Raleigh, North Carolina, serving the blind and print-impaired community since 1983. This is Nancy Jones. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the Hollywood 2020 issue of Vanity Fair magazine. This is Vanity Fair Part A. Money Matters by William D. Cohan. Trading Places. The frothy marriage between Hollywood and Wall Street may be too hot not to cool down. Opening in illustration by Ryan Garcia. Showing a man in a suit on a stand-up paddleboard shaped like a Hollywood star, paddling in a bloody sea with shark fins and dollars all around. Officially, Will Smith was on hand to promote his new film, Gemini Man, but it's increasingly hard to tell which is his day job. Smith, the actor and rapper famous for such movies as Hitch, I Am Legend, and Men in Black, was on stage at the TechCrunch Disrupt Conference on October 2nd in San Francisco, conducting an impromptu bake-off between four entrepreneurs to see who would get a cash infusion from Smith's venture capital fund, Dreamers VC. Of course, since movie stars trying their hand at venture capital is now one of Hollywood's hottest things, Smith wasn't the only actor disrupting the Disrupt Conference. Joseph Gordon-Levitt was also there, talking about Hit Record, an online startup dedicated to creative collaboration. Maisie Williams, Arya from Game of Thrones, was discussing Daisy, an app for which she had just raised $2.5 million that, like Hit Record, is dedicated to creative collaboration. Ashton Kutcher, the grand old man of actor investing, was also on hand. Kutcher was one of the judges of Startup Battlefield, a kind of American Idol for tech startups. Smith started Dreamers VC, which has around $100 million to invest, in July 2018 with Keisuke Honda, a Japanese soccer star, using money from Japanese investors looking to get in on early-stage U.S. startups. "We just hit it off immediately," Smith said at the TechCrunch conference about his partnership with Honda. "We felt like there was a beautiful intersection between being able to create businesses, but also to stay focused on solving problems of the world." They had each been investing on their own, but decided to join forces. "Our values were in alignment," Smith said. Smith and Honda lead a team of five professionals, including Melissa Danis, the chief of staff, who looks like a Hollywood actor, and D.A. Wallach, a Harvard-educated singer-investor who looks like a young Bob Dylan, and who also has an investing partnership with Ron Burkle, the Los Angeles supermarket buyout billionaire. On its website, Dreamers list 38 investments, including those in Boba Guys. They have retail stores that make and sell boba milk tea. And Elon Musk, the Boring Company, which is hoping to build urban tunnels to alleviate traffic, and In Just Water, a politically correct packaged water company. At TechCrunch, Smith jokingly ratcheted up the pressure on the four entrepreneurs as they were sharing their 45-second elevator pitches. "It's only an opportunity of a lifetime," he told them, "and everything rides on this, so just relax into that." First up was Airbnb, a startup that hopes to be the Uber or Airbnb of bicycles. Then there was Bitter, an app that connects Latino construction workers with job opportunities. Smith seemed particularly struck by the appearance of Cody, the Bitter presenter. You should sell your handsomeness along with your product, Smith said. But it was Kofi Frimpong, the co-founder of Socionado, which helps small companies beef up their online, social media, and marketing presence, who really blew Smith away. I'm in, Smith announced. I'm in. He hopped right up and stood next to the more physically imposing Frimpong. Let's rock a selfie, Smith said, adding that Frimpong could post the picture to his social media accounts and that Dreamers would invest $10,000 in Socionado. In an interview a month later, Frimpong was still buzzing about the experience. He says it all happened serendipitously. Trust me, he says, if I knew I was presenting on stage in front of Will Smith, I would have gotten a haircut. By early December, a plan was in place for an investment in excess of the promised $10,000. But there are tangible benefits besides money to Smith's interest in the company. The picture of them together, posted to LinkedIn by Frimpong, is approaching about 1 million views, he says, plus supercharged traction on Instagram and Twitter. The symbiosis between show business and Wall Street is at a frothy peak, as actors like Smith, Gordon Levitt, and Williams, among others, ramp up their involvement. It's a favored hobby for entertainers in their downtime, and for Wall Street types anxious to hang out with the glitterati. Ben Horowitz, the co-founder of Andreessen Horowitz, the Silicon Valley venture capital firm, is a big fan of Nas the rapper, and they have been investing together for years, including in the company's Rap Genius and Bevel. He just loves him, one longtime Hollywood observer says of Horowitz's relationship with Nas. Venture capital can also be highly lucrative at the moment. Ed Norton's private equity investments have seriously amplified his wealth, thanks in large part to his early investments in Uber, CrowdRise, EDO, and Kensho, an analytics and artificial intelligence company that S&P Global bought for $550 million in 2018. Norton has a net worth estimated at around $80 million. In many different show business fields, the talent now believes it's also the brains, and in many cases the talent is right. The latest mind-blowing example of Hollywood colliding with Wall Street is Kylie Jenner, the youngest Kardashian sister, who is all of 22. Back when she was merely 18, Jenner started Kylie Cosmetics to market and sell makeup to her millions of Instagram followers. It was no fluke. In its first 18 months, the company generated $420 million in revenue. In November, Jenner sold 51% of Kylie Cosmetics to Coty, the publicly traded cosmetics company, for $600 million. A price that valued the entire company at nearly $1.2 billion. In March 2019, Forbes named her the world's youngest self-made billionaire. The whole Kardashian thing, they are a machine, says Chris Silberman, the managing partner at ICM Partners, the Hollywood talent and literary agency. That's just business. They've run companies. They know how to build brands, run brands, leverage their social media platform. That's the top of the pyramid in terms of how to do this. The premier actor-investor has long been Kutcher, who makes occasional appearances on CNBC's Shark Tank, alongside professional investors such as Barbara Corcoran, Mark Cuban, Kevin O'Leary, and Lori Grenier. Although Kutcher declined to be interviewed, Cuban, his fellow Shark Tank star, emailed me about Kutcher, the investor. One of the best. He is a learner. He reads, pays attention to what is happening around him, and looks for investments that can deliver and or disrupt. I'm really happy to have worked with him and would do more. Kutcher's been investing in venture capital details in venture capital deals for a decade, and he's good at it. He's the co-founder, along with Guy Osiri, the manager of Madonna and U2, of A-Grade Investments, and a second fund, Sound Ventures. Burkle was the third founding investor in A-Grade. Burkle invested $8 million. Kutcher and Osiri invested $1 million each. The first three letters of A-Grade correspond to the first three letters of the three founders' first names. 6 years later, in 2016, Kutcher was on the cover of Forbes, being celebrated for his canny investments in Uber, Airbnb, Spotify, Skype, Pinterest, and Warby Parker, among others, and because he and Osiri had managed to turn the initial $30 million in A-Grade into $250 million, or a return of more than eight times the initial investment. While Kutcher has been playing the game for years, the field is definitely more crowded these days. Could it be the modern-day equivalent of the old Wall Street saw about how, in 1929, Joseph Kennedy Sr., the father of the future President of the United States, as well as the future first chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission, realized it was time to sell all his stocks and preserve his multi-generational fortune when the guy shining his shoes offered him stock tips? While Silberman advises his Hollywood clients to steer clear of private equity investments because it too often takes them away from what should be their primary focus, their acting careers, he does not think the new wave of actors investing in deals is indicative of a market top. He says it doesn't seem as crazy now as it did during the dot-com bubble. 1999 felt, "This is effing crazy," and everybody was going in every deal, he says. But Scott Galloway, the iconoclastic professor of marketing at NYU's Stern School of Business, thinks this so-called sector surfing, where professionals from one industry think they can make a go of it in an unrelated profession, is a sign of a market top. Sector surfing is a sport, he says. It's not an investment strategy. So, Jeff Bezos getting to go to the Academy Awards, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just going to cost him billions of dollars. The majority of the people who are successful in private equity are people in private equity, Galloway continues. But whenever you have a sector that outperforms other sectors, it immediately draws people from other industries, and everybody likes hanging out with actors. Actors almost always have a free entry pass to any sector they decide is interesting, but it's usually a forward-looking indicator that returns are about to plummet. Added one Wall Street lawyer, bluntly, "I think these guys are going to get their heads handed to them." Now for this issue's cover story, Destination Hollywood, starring Eddie Murphy, Renee Zellweger, Jennifer Lopez, Florence Pugh, Taika Waititi, Daniel Kaluuya, Margaret Qualley, Awkwafina, Lily Rose Depp, Laura Dern, Willem Dafoe, Jennifer Hudson, Alfre Woodard, Roman Griffin Davis, Noah Jupe, Oakes Fegley, Divine Joy, Randolph, Lily Reinhart, Park, Sodom Taylor, Russell, Antonio Banderas, Austin Butler, Beanie Feldstein. We open on a highway at sunset. Vanity Fair asked 23 of the year's most extraordinary actors, some of them legends, some of them embarking on their first major roles, to make a road movie with us. In the photos, Eddie Murphy from Dolomite Is My Name, Renee Zellweger from Judy, Jennifer Lopez from Hustlers, Margaret Qualley from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Florence Pugh from Little Women and Midsommar, Taika Waititi from Jojo Rabbit, Daniel Kaluuya from Queen and Slim. They nailed it. Welcome to the 26th annual Hollywood issue, with photographs by Ethan James Green, styled by Samira Nasser, with set design by Julie Wagner. And in more photos, Awkwafina from The Farewell, Lily Rose Depp from The King, Laura Dern from Little Women and Marriage Story, Willem Dafoe from The Lighthouse, Alfre Woodard from Clemency, Roman Griffin Davis from Jojo Rabbit, Noah Jupe from Ford vs. Ferrari and Honey Boy, Oakes Fegley from The Goldfinch, Jennifer Hudson from Cats, Lily Reinhart from Hustlers, Park Sodom from Parasite, Taylor Russell from Waves, Divine Joy Randolph from Dolomite Is My Name, Antonio Banderas from Pain and Glory, Austin Butler from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and Beanie Feldstein from Booksmart. None of them did it the easy way, and they're here to tell you that there is no easy way. Jennifer Lopez, Eddie Murphy, Renee Zellweger, and 8 other luminous, multi-talented performers get their old-school glamour on and talk candidly about what it takes to build a career in Hollywood and to survive it. The Great Entertainers by Mark Harris. Interviews by Britt Hinemuth, Anthony Bresnikan, and Jeff Giles. Photographs by Ethan James Green, styled by Samira Nasser, set design by Julia Wagner. By the time the actors are ready to give the performance of a lifetime, they usually understand a great deal about lifetimes. It's impossible to watch Jennifer Lopez in Hustlers, Eddie Murphy in Dolomite Is My Name, or Renee Zellweger in Judy without realizing that you're in the presence of both mastery and ease. That combination is the result of a journey, sometimes a long one, into an actor's prime. Very often there are bumps along the way, the rises, the disappointments, the comebacks, the odd detours, the triumphs, the mistakes, the loops that can trap you before you realize they're loops, the odd whims or phone calls or spur-of-the-moment decisions that can change your trajectory forever. All entertainers eventually understand the vicissitudes of a career, but few understand it as vividly as the three people on our cover. If you doubt it, let's jump back 25 years and check in with them. In 1994, Murphy was a superstar who had already had his breakthrough on Saturday Night Live, turned it into blazing success in a dozen movies, most of them hits, and was making Beverly Hills Cop 3 and getting his first peek into the abyss of diminishing returns. Lopez had taken her first big upward leap, all the way from Fly Girl, for millennials that means backup dancer, on the Fox sketch comedy series In Living Color, to co-star of Hotel Malibu, a CBS summer replacement series that lasted all of 6 episodes, but was at least an acting gig. And Zellweger, a recent college graduate, had finally gotten her big break, a role alongside another Texas newcomer, Matthew McConaughey, in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Next Generation, which meant that if her luck held, maybe she wouldn't have to go back to cocktail waitressing. As any of them will tell you, it hasn't been a straight line to 2020. Lopez became an international music star, but also endured the Geely years. Murphy won an Oscar nomination for Dreamgirls, but also got to a point where the prospect of going before the cameras one more time made him so unhappy that he walked away from it. And Zellweger won an Academy Award for Cold Mountain. But later reached a point where she felt she could only regain her life by taking 5 years off from making films. None of them are asking for sympathy, but all of them can explain that being looked at for a living is a complicated and challenging business. So it's particularly satisfying to see each of them experience a glorious mid-career resurgence that also seems to be an embrace of who they are, rather than an attempt to hide or alter it. They're not playing themselves. As Murphy says, no actor is who you think that person is, but they're using themselves and doing it more effectively than ever. The hard shell of glamour and the ambition, drive, sexuality, savvy, and churning emotion just underneath it are traits that other actors might try to alter, but in Hustlers, Lopez embraces them and then pours them into her character. Murphy roars through Dolomite Is My Name like a man who has rediscovered the joy of playing someone larger than life and of making people laugh. And although people have been justifiably wowed by Zellweger's precise and physically detailed transformation into Judy Garland in Judy, at heart, her performance embodies the tremulousness and compassion and empathy that have always been integral to her most memorable work. It doesn't seem coincidental that in 2019, all three actors gave benchmark performances, not only playing real people, but playing real people who themselves are performers, who understand the liberation of transforming oneself into someone else and of inhabiting an invented persona, but who also get what hard work it is. They've been there. They've sweated it. They have more than earned this moment. Perhaps there's something to be said for coming at acting in a roundabout way, as Lopez, Murphy, and Zellweger all did. Nobody who sees the work done by Little Women's Florence Pugh, 24, or Booksmart's Beanie Feldstein, 26, or Queen and Slim's Daniel Kaluuya, 30, would deny that they all seem born to be doing exactly what they are doing. But starting out your life wanting to do something else can make the turn to acting a decision that's enriched by your other passions and experiences. It's what Jennifer Hudson has been discovering in the 15 years since she broke through on American Idol, and Awkwafina in the last couple of years as she's turned from rap and comedy to acting. It's okay not to grow up hell-bent on being a movie star. Maybe it's even a good thing. Lopez started as a dancer and singer and says her influences were James Brown, Diana Ross, and the explosive kind of performance energy of Tina Turner. Long before she knew the word hyphenate, she was enthralled by the versatility of singing and dancing and acting, a Barbara Streisand having a recording career and a movie career. Singing and dancing takes strength, confidence, showmanship, and control over one's body and posture and breathing, which was good training for her thrillingly assured work as Hustler's Ramona. As Lopez puts it, "The role was the first time I got to play a character who was unapologetically out for herself, and kind of bad, actually taken over by greed. She was so many different things. That was really new for me." Murphy's influences have always been comic performers. Rudy Ray Moore, the man he plays in Dolomite, is one of them. I'm part of the same chain as him, and Richard Pryor, and Dick Gregory, and Bill Cosby, and Dave Chappelle, and Chris Rock, and Martin Lawrence, he says, we're all linked together. Murphy sees his place in that timeline as a kind of responsibility, one that he has paid forward and backward. I buried so many people over the years, he says. For some strange reason, a lot of people in show business, when they die, don't have their stuff in order. For Red Fox, I had to physically pay for his funeral and his headstone and all that stuff. For Moore, who died in 2008, Murphy's performance offers a different kind of tribute, as huge and rich and funny and unafraid to court preposterousness as it is. It's also an act of real empathy for someone who didn't get the lucky moment, the fateful audition, the magic phone call, and had to create his own big break. And for Zellweger, acting, she says, only half joking, was the fork. I didn't mean this at all. This was a big mistake. Ask her to name her childhood heroes, and she cites any athlete, especially the gymnast. Oh my gosh, Olga Korbut and Nadia Comaneci, and then Mary Lou Retton. I did the sport when I was small. I know the degree of difficulty and commitment, the level of focus it requires, and alchemy, how many things have to come together perfectly in a moment in order for it to work. Zellweger calls herself a failed journalist. I went to school to write, and here we are. And you can see strains of both of those passions in her performance in Judy. The absolute physical precision and the reporter's desire to understand and convey the reality of another person and her circumstances. None of them, clearly, have ever been afraid to pivot. For Lopez, her career as a music performer has always been a parallel passion, not something to fall back on, but rather another side of herself to turn and return to. But that didn't make the hard moments or wrong calls easier. More than 15 years later, she still kicks herself for passing on the leading role in the movie Unfaithful. I should have known that Adrienne Lyne was going to kill it, but I didn't, she says. Diane Lane was so perfect for it, and it was obviously meant to be her. But when I think about that, I was offered it, and I had the opportunity. I want to literally, like, shoot my toe off. I do. Murphy and Zellweger faced darker periods, moments when the exuberance, with which they entered their profession all but vanished. Neither was afraid to do the unthinkable and save themselves by walking away. About 8 years ago, Murphy recalls, I said it's time to take a break and not really be pushing at movies. Getting it right with the director and the writers and having everything work together, that takes a lot of effort, and it's strenuous. I had gotten to the point where I was just so burned out on the process of making a movie that if I was a little boy, I would have started crying. After a couple of years of saying, it's time to back off and sit on the couch and just be dad, he's got 10 kids, ranging in age from 1 to 30, he felt ready to go back to work. I just want to do stuff where there's an emotional hook, and not just because, you know, somebody flashed big dollar signs in front of you, he says. At almost exactly the same time, Zellweger was going through her own journey and doing it far from film sets. When you repeat yourself in your profession, it doesn't leave a lot of room for discovery and growth, she says. That's not to say it's not possible to branch out and be challenged by new things. But I realized that there was not time for the things I wanted to experience if I was to keep doing what I had been doing. I just hadn't found a way to allow for those things that are important and nurturing. So she stopped. She made no movies for 6 years, and she tuned out noise from an industry that wondered why she had walked away. She didn't step back on a set until I recognized myself again, when I had a life instead of just a profession, when I had friends who I saw on a regular basis. Lopez and Zellweger, born just 3 months apart, are both 50 now, and neither seems remotely afraid of that number. Zellweger says, I like to challenge myself physically every day with something. I'm a runner, so yeah, if you throw a hill at me, I'll take it. And last fall, Lopez called attention to the passage of time by wearing the jungle dress, the famous and famously revealing Donatella Versace gown that excited so much interest when she wore it to the 2000 Grammys that it resulted in the creation of Google images. Many performers might avoid then and now photos. Lopez loved it. The second time I wore it and walked out there, it was such an empowering thing, she says. 20 years had gone by, and I think for women, knowing you can put on a dress 20 years later, it resonated. It was like, yes, you know, life is not over at 20. Wait a few decades, and you might even get to headline a Super Bowl halftime show. As for Murphy, the effusively proud and sentimental, brace yourselves, grandfather, is now planning a stand-up comedy tour, his first in decades. At 58, he considers himself at the tail end of the middle. That self-assessment doesn't seem at all unreasonable when contemporaries like Laura Dern, Antonio Banderas, and Willem Dafoe, 52, 59, and 64, respectively, are all reaching pinnacles with work that feels deep and informed by experience and perspective. What's especially inspiring is the degree to which these three stars all seem to have developed distance without detachment. They care about their work passionately, but that's only because they've made passion a precondition for doing the work in the first place. If they don't feel it, they're happy to go home, where they've got lives they care about at least as much. Murphy, who lost his older brother Charlie to leukemia 3 years ago, Dolomite Is My Name, is dedicated to him, says nothing is more important than his family, and offers some sobering words of caution to anyone who might let an eyes-on-the-prize mentality define them. The people I knew around my age who had impact in their areas, Michael and Prince and Whitney, they're gone, he says. And without getting into what they did and why they're not here, what they had in common was that their career, their life as artist, was all-consuming. The center of their whole shit revolved around them as artists, and everything else suffered as a result. Your personal relationships, your finances, substance abuse problems, all that stuff is because show business can't be the center. That's the recipe for an early exit. Perhaps that's why, when Lopez is asked about goals she still wants to fulfill, she looks in an unexpected direction. It's always a career thing that they ask about, and I think, oh yeah, direct. But if you're saying bucket list, I would say I would love to live somewhere other than the United States, in a small town in Italy, or on the other side of the world, in Bali. Find another life where it's a little bit more simple and organic, and where I get to ride a bike and buy bread and put it in my basket and then go home and put jelly on it and just eat and paint, or sit in a rocking chair where there was a beautiful view of an olive tree or an oak tree and I could just smell. I have fantasies like that. That may have to wait. It's easier to imagine Lopez and her colleagues diving back into work, not because they have something to prove, but because they don't. They just want to do their own thing on their own terms. No one's going to invite you to do it, says Zellweger. You shouldn't wait. If it's something that's your passion, then do it. That really is the truth. No one's ever going to anoint you and say, no, you do have the skills to do this. You really do. Even before you've checked off all the things on your list that you think will validate you or substantiate you or your desire to participate. There's always going to be someone who tells you not to do it. Be around a bunch of people who tell you you can. Now for the interviews. The Transformer, Renee Zellweger, hometown, Katy, Texas, film, Judy. Your brother first got you into a school play. He's always been very protective of you, hasn't he? Very, but he also helps me keep perspective. Like with my first big public breakup, he picked up all the tabloids, and we were riding in the car home, and his shoulders were shaking, and I thought, oh gosh, he's crying too. And I look over. He's laughing. He thought it was the best thing in the world. All the things that the tabloids say that you said and did, he started reading them out loud in a ridiculous voice, and we were both laughing till we were crying. I've looked at it that way ever since. The Renaissance Man, Eddie Murphy, hometown, Brooklyn, film, Dolomite Is My Name. What's a side of you we've never seen? I've played everything from an old lady to a donkey and everything in between. Middle-aged women and old Asian people and an old Jewish guy. I even played a spaceship. It was in that movie Meet Dave. The movie wasn't shit, but I did play a spaceship. I've been the professor, I've been the cops, and I've been a robber, and I've been a doctor talking to the animals. To be an actor and to get to play so many different types of things. But when I'm on television, when I'm in a movie, that's a persona. No actor is who you think that person is. The Force of Nature, Jennifer Lopez, hometown, The Bronx, film, Hustlers. Who are the entertainers that you've looked to for inspiration? Growing up, I was really taken by the Barbra Streisands of the world, the Tina Turners, and I would say Diana Ross, I would say James Brown, I would say Janet Jackson. I loved my mom, who introduced me to musicals and movies and fairy tales and the stories of all these different lives. People who are multifaceted or have an explosive energy on stage or on the screen. I think that's what I've always emulated as a performer. The Leading Man, Daniel Kaluuya, hometown, London, film, Queen and Slim. Has there been a particularly low moment in your career? It was a year before Sicario. I looked at giving up. I didn't know how healthy this was for my psychological well-being. Rejection is fine. I thought the reasons were bankrupt. It was racism, essentially. It was like they were saying, we don't want black leads. I had done the stage, done Black Mirror, done a studio film. I thought, oh, they want me to hate myself. I had to reassess. How do I do this by being myself? I was playing a game that didn't suit me. When you're playing a game that doesn't suit you, you don't win. Even if you win, you don't win. The Showstopper, Jennifer Hudson, Hometown, Chicago, Film, Cats. What's been a perfect moment in your career? Last night I had a moment. I said, Jennifer, do you realize you're in the film Cats? You're singing Memory, that iconic song. Do you realize you're playing Aretha Franklin in a movie in the middle of that? Do you realize you have all these photo shoots? My friend Walter is my partner. He was always determined for the world to hear me sing. When we were kids, we would sit in his car, and we would use his grandmother's credit card to buy me clothes to perform in. We had this whole idea of how this industry would work for us one day. And now I'll be like, do you realize we made it? We really made it. The Chameleon, Willem Dafoe, Hometown, Appleton, Wisconsin, Film, The Lighthouse. What's been a perfect moment in your career? The Last Temptation of Christ was a wonderful project. You try not to have favorites, but that experience demanded a lot of me, and I work best when a lot is demanded of me. I got a call that Martin Scorsese wanted to talk to me. I was shocked initially. I said, what role? And my agent said, you idiot, Jesus. The Prodigy, Florence Pugh, Hometown, Oxfordshire, England, Film, Little Women. What's been a perfect moment in your career? I would watch so many things as a kid, so many child actors, and I'd go, oh shit, I would have loved playing that role. The first actress I ever watched where I thought, oh my goodness, no one else could have done that, was Saoirse in Atonement. I remember thinking, if I get to work with her one day, that would be the most magnificent thing. And last year I was on the set of Little Women with her. We have a no soppy rule in our friendship because we're so bro-y with each other. But I wrote it in a card, and she sent me a text like, you goon. She's a magical person and a magical actress. The Open Book, Beanie Feldstein, Hometown, Los Angeles, Film, Booksmart. Has there been a particularly low moment in your career? I don't know if this counts, because I was very little, but when I was 9, I had huge nodules on my vocal cords. I was a 9-year-old that loved Stephen Sondheim more than anything else in the world. I lost the ability to speak and sing, and they didn't know if I would get it back. I was on the floor of my doctor's office wailing. That anxiety over my voice, that panic, lives in me every day. I still sort of see myself as that 9-year-old, trying to build back something that she lost. El Viajero, Antonio Banderas, Hometown, Malaga, Spain, Film, Pain and Glory. What was a decision that changed your life? It was the day that I decided to leave Malaga and go to Madrid to be a professional. I hopped into a train called Dos Corazón. I would say I was 19. My mother, she sewed inner pockets in my pants, so if somebody assaults me, they wouldn't find the money. I remember my friends there in the station. They brought me cigarettes. And I remember the train did a clunk, and very slowly I saw my friends going away. I remember thinking, this is the last day of me as I was. When I come back here, I have to be another me, someone who comes not with empty hands, somebody who brings something. The Queen, Laura Dern, hometown, Los Angeles, films, Little Women, and Marriage Story. What was a decision that changed your life? I think it was early on, choosing to work for filmmakers and be taught by filmmakers as my education, and that meant taking very little money, taking three scenes in the movie for Peter Bogdanovich versus the lead in a Brat Pack movie. In the 80s, other people became famous very quickly, but I look back on my career, and I look back on what I learned from my parents, Bruce Dern and Diane Ladd, and it was such a sublime moment of saying, I'm here to learn, I'm here to grow, I'm here to work with auteurs and be of service to the story, whatever part I am. The original Awkwafina, hometown, Queens, film, The Farewell. You've been getting more comfortable with people knowing you by your given name, Nora, rather than by Awkwafina. When I first started as Awkwafina, there was a more distinct duality, where this is the one that's performing, and this is the one that's at home having a panic attack. But as I get older, I think they're the same person. Regrets Only by Maureen O'Connor. For years, publicist Peggy Siegel was an essential New York party host and omnipresent player in the annual Oscar Squirrel. Then her past relationship with Jeffrey Epstein came to light. Will she ever live it down? Opening photo on the scene. Peggy Siegel with Oliver Stone, Sandy Brandt, Ingrid Cisci, Terry Gilliam, and Edward Pressman at a Vanity Fair party at Hôtel du Cap et d'un Roc, Cap d'Antibes, 2010. Peggy Siegel was on a yacht off the coast of Capri when her life fell apart. She'd flown from London to Italy in early July to attend a dinner Larry Gagosian was hosting at Villa Malaparte, the cliff-top mansion overlooking the Gulf of Salerno, where Jean-Luc Godard filmed Contempt. Siegel, a Manhattan-based movie publicist and professional host to the New York establishment, was to stay on a friend's feed ship until the party. Then she would go to another friend's home in the south of France to celebrate her 72nd birthday. Then back home, then to the Hamptons, and then to the Greek island of Patmos. At summer's end, she would attend film festivals in Telluride and Toronto. For decades, the Peggy Siegel Company has been a linchpin in successful Oscar campaigns. Her exclusive screenings and the buzz and bonhomie they inspire are crucial for pushing members of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences to vote for films she promotes. When Oscar season is at its height, Siegel has been known to host 5 events per week. The day of Siegel's flight from London to Naples, New York Times reporter Jody Cantor contacted her about disgraced financier and convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein's social life. 4 days prior, federal agents had arrested Epstein on sex trafficking charges when his private jet landed at Teterboro Airport. For decades, Epstein had cut a shadowy figure in New York and Palm Beach with his mysterious fortune and connections to power players. This article will be continued in the next installment. This program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. I'm Nancy Jones, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service and broadcasting from its studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. Vanity Fair Part A airs via special subchannel receiver on Saturday and Sunday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Vanity Fair Part B airs via special subchannel receiver on Monday and Tuesday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Both parts A and B are available as a podcast. Opening and closing music by Calexico. Interval selections by Mark Hoffman.